Okay, you're very welcome back to the second hour of the 9 till noon show. How are you all doing? I do hope you're very well indeed, and we do appreciate your listening to the programme today. And all of those of you who are watching as well, great to have you on board. Okay, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right, some of your comments here. Greg, there was a minister in Israel over the weekend that said he wanted to wipe out the Palestinians, tell them to go to Ireland or the desert. Indeed, I heard that, and I thought it quite interesting that of all the European nations, Ireland was singled out in those comments. Another, Israel gave the Palestinian people the chance to leave, encouraging them, Hamas then to stay. Well, like, you have to imagine, we talk about difficulty in accessing hospitals, no bus services and all that type of stuff. You know, as well as many, many people who are in hospital that can't be moved. And if they happen to be moved, you don't know if the ambulance is going to be attacked. And if you had someone sick in a hospital, would you leave? Would you flee, or would you stay? There's still 400,000 people there. I don't think it's for... I don't think it's because they want to. I think it's because they feel they have to. The majority of people worldwide do not support Hamas. They are empathetic to innocent people being subjected to death and destruction by a superior military force. Maybe Michael should learn a bit more about the non-Israel settlers who have been killing Palestinians for decades and taking their lands by force. His knowledge on the history is mediocre. The land was called Canaan in biblical times. Is that man? If that man was on a United Nations peacekeeping force, then he doesn't sound very impartial. Poor Greg is getting tied in knots. No, I'm not getting tied in knots at all. I'm really reluctant to comment about something or that I am not fully aware of. And I think there's too much of that going on. We do see people in this country. They're assembling in a panel to discuss the intricacies of why this is happening and why that's happening. And you know, they've read those opinions elsewhere. So I'm not in knots, literally just trying to tease out the conversation, but not say anything that I don't genuinely have an understanding of. But I appreciate your comment. Greg, there are two or three sides to every conflict, and you, me, and most people here in Ireland, even our government, don't understand the situation in those countries. Look at how this is exactly what was happening right through the Old Testament. The actions are abominable, but there is a great lack of respect for life, unborn life here in our own country, and everyone just turns a blind eye. Don't say there's no correlation. There is just no Christianity. That man's making my blood boil. He's completely wrong. Israel is an apartheid state. Palestinians living in an open-air prison while the world looks on. Palestinian children were being murdered every day by Israeli soldiers, as well as many others. He's saying children being beheaded by Hamas, which I didn't hear because I would have corrected at that time. This has since been corrected as being total lies. He needs to get his facts right. Many, many prominent Jews are totally against the war. It is the Zionist Jews, supported by America, who want all Palestinians out of Gaza for good. It is part of the Greater Gaza Plan. Look it up. Excellent independent journalists like John Pilger and Jonathan Cook will enlighten him. And on it goes. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. We're joined on the programme now by Fianna Fáil councillor Patrick McGowan. Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking the time out.
Morning, Greg.
Right. Thanks, okay. Greg. We've been talking. Well, you've been discussing or making inquiries on the issue we were discussing a little bit later on. What have you learned, or what have you found out?
Oh, well, it's just at the moment that there's an embargo on at the moment and to do with the Forza dispute within civil servants within the HSE. So I'm finding it very, very difficult to get responses back. I've been sending out queries this last couple of weeks and getting very little back. But what I can say is I very much agree with that lady you had on earlier that I've been getting calls all the time, including even yesterday there from local families who avail of the respite and much needed the respite, because sometimes there's families that have nobody at home. You know, there might only be one or two in the family and they're maybe working or they're away. So the respite are vital in them cases. And then again, there's very little home care packages available at the moment as well. So people are very, very much dependent here in this area on St. Joseph's. And I have been hearing as well now that the St. Joseph's has been used now as a step down from Letterkenny Hospital. And that one was right. They're moving people from the Letterkenny catchment area over to St. Arthur for a step down, and then while there's people within the Finn Valley area, let's say, that need respite, they've been told then to go to nursing homes over in the, say, the Letterkenny area.
Do you have any sympathy? Do you have any sympathy for the HSC in trying to keep all of these balls in the air? That, you know, they need one dedicated.
Well, not really, and you know, I know it's not easy as there's lack of beds, but you know, apparently the beds are there. So what they're doing is, the respite for people that don't need any more medical attention, they've been sent to St. Joseph's, whereas the people that do get medical intervention and it gives the family, it's not only gives the family a time respite and that, but it also catches up on you know, they do get medical attention as well. So, like, why send the people from St. Arlott to Letterkenny and then send step down the other way?
But you're asking you're asking the same questions that our listeners are asking. Do you have any answers?
No, I don't, because the problem is people have been commenting this the last couple of weeks, but apparently the Forza Union has said to include councillors within this embargo. They're not giving out information. Same was a few months ago, it was to do with the kind of councillors. Now it's to the FFD as well. So I've been trying to get through the various ministers, offices, which they always try to do to get their responses.
All right, Councillor, unfortunately that line has just gone for us, but we get your point. Jennifer, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
It's not just St. Joseph's Community Hospital, you're saying?
No, my father-in-law goes into Remelton Community Hospital.
Okay.
And first of all, in September, we were told that there was no beds for him due to the extra influx coming from Letterkenny Hospital. And then October, we've been cancelled our October respite.
Wow.
We sort of had to change it around a bit. Now, they did offer us again to go to a different respite location. But my father-in-law has dementia, and we said, no way. It's either he lives with us or Remelton's excellent, and he's used to going there. He's not going anywhere. We're holding on until they come back to tell us, basically, that they were able to take him again.
Right. Have you been given any indication on the time frame for this service not to be available in Remelton? Was the wording to suggest at this time or going forward, Jennifer?
No, just she said at this time. At this time, due to the lack of beds. So I said, well, sure, keep me updated now for going forward for November, December, if anything comes available. So that's how we left it.
But because of your father-in-law and what you know to be best for him, you have lost the respite effectively. I mean, it was offered in a different location, but you know that's not good for him.
It's not, no. We just wouldn't call us very protective, but just with his routine and what he knows and the people he knows, his friends are in Remelton. He knows people know him in Remelton. We wouldn't be comfortable sending him somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And plus, we weren't going to be in the country. We had a holiday plan. So there would have been nobody. We wouldn't have been there to visit him or to go in if anything had happened. They did take him in September because we were going away, but we've left it now that we'll just wait for Remelton again.
Wow, okay. All right. Listen, Jennifer, thanks for helping us to get an insight into it, and best wishes to your father-in-law and the whole family. Thank you.
Okay, thank
All right,
you, Greg.
Take
thank
care.
You.
Right, a lot of you have been commenting since we heard from Michael. The two-state solution was never offered by Israel, says one listener. And here's a voice note, someone commenting on what we heard from Michael there.
Your caller there that's online at the minute has absolutely no sense of what's going on. When the IRA were bombing Ireland, Northern Ireland and England, did the UK come in and demolish Belfast or Northern Ireland or the Republic of Ireland? No, they didn't.
All right, if you want to have your say via voice note, 08660 25000. Greg, that man is the first time I've heard anyone publicly asking for people to see Hamas for what they are, i.e. they want to terminate the Jewish people. Yes, Israel are Goliath, of course, but Hamas have only one goal and will never accept a two-state solution, so therein lies the problem. Greg, get that man off the radio. If he served as a UN peacekeeper for the Irish Army, his pension should be stopped immediately. Another good morning, Greg. That gentleman, Michael, clearly well-informed man. Every word is valid in what he says. Greg, sorry, but the discussion is clearly showcasing Michael's knowledge of what is the truth of this conflict going back many years. Again, another sets of opinion. Right, OK, thank you very much for all of that. As I say, on any issue at all, feel free to send in your voice notes. As you can hear, it's a good way of getting your views across. 086 60 25,000. Right, OK, let me see. People who don't pay their TV licence have no case. It is the law, just like car tax. Oh, I have to renew my car tax. Thank you for that. It is the law, just like car tax and household charge. Citing perceived misappropriation of funds by RTE is not a defence. And if it is proved that you don't hold a current licence, a judge has no option but to convict. It's not worth all that hassle. And we do need a public service broadcaster, whatever its faults. If we didn't contribute to RTE, it would depend on commercial sponsorship. In such cases, we may not get independent, unbiased information. Remember, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And some people would say the government calls the tune because it pays the piper. But anyway, that's another situation. Right, OK. Kevin's with us now. Hiya, Kevin.
How's it going?
I'm all right. I'm okay. Right, we're highlighting the problem of litter, Kevin. What did you come across?
Well, at the weekend there, we found multiple bags. It was like nappies and stuff. It was along the forest there at Alston. And 5 or 6 spin bags full of rubbish. You know?
Just dumped there?
Just dumped at the side of the road, along the forest.
Whereabouts is this just... sorry, I didn't ask you at the beginning.
It's on the back road there between Austin and Coolboy. Mm. If you're turning in the back phone station there, it's along that forest there.
Household rubbish, obviously.
Mostly household. A lot of it was nappies and takeaway wrappers and stuff like that, but mostly nappies.
My word. Horrible mess too. If birds get at that and start breaking it open, it can cause an awful mess, or any animals for that matter.
There's a lot of food in it, so the crows are kind of a whole lot pulled across the road, but... And me and the younger, then we were yesterday and gathered the whole lot up again.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Your daughter, she's just 11 years of age. She shouldn't have to, but she did spend the end of her Halloween holidays cleaning up someone else's mess.
That's right, which last year holidays, Kayla, she's 11. She spent maybe 2 or 3 hours yesterday. She gathered the whole thing up again. She went out this morning on the way to school again. The road's the same. There's a lot of rubbish lying again overnight again. A lot of bottles and cans and stuff, I guess.
But you do clean-ups, don't you? You and your daughter with others. That wouldn't be unusual to come across bottles and cans and what have you.
Bottles and cans, yeah, that's fairly common. Like Kayla, maybe an hour every Saturday morning she would go out and get her, but not so much the bin bags. That's kind of a new one. As people come out and throw bin bags everywhere next time.
Yeah, okay. Fair play to her, by the way, just generally having an interest in keeping the area clean. Where does that come from?
Not to me, you know. I don't know where she gets it from now. But, okay.
She just has an interest in the environment.
She likes to keep the place clean and looking good, then.
Fair play to her. What do we do, though, Kevin? Because, you know, we hear these cases all the while, and I'm sure as we speak, there are other people probably taking their phone out to text, spotting something similar in their area across the region. How do we get through to people that this is just completely unacceptable behaviour? Because we can't have... You know, we can't have litter wardens on every by road and corner road, you know, to keep an eye on this. But how do we get the message through?
That's a hard one, not sure. Starting from the young ones, like our wains, we taught them from young not to be throwing rubbish out the one. If you see rubbish in the ground, pick it up and put it in the bin. Like, it's as easy to pick the rubbish up and put it in the bin as they throw in the ground.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of... I'd say the bin bags doesn't seem to be local. We went through the bin bags. Mm. They have names and addresses. I'm not going to mention them.
Understood.
But that's not locals. We have the names and addresses here. It's not locals. It's people coming out maybe from the town, driving 5 or 6 miles. They're putting them bin bags in the boots. They're putting petrol in the car. They drive out the countryside. The bin labels for 10 or 11 euro. Why not go to the shop and buy a bin label? Put the rubbish in the bin and it lifts it. Well, that's the easier option.
But, what are you going to do with that info? Would you pass it on to the guards, or do you not want the hassle, or what are you going to do?
I don't think there'll be much done about it. We'd rather just lift the rubbish, get it disposed of properly, and just keep the place clean. We're not looking to punish anybody for it, but just...
Just tell them to look at the economy of it. You're driving out of town into a rural area. How much you're spending on petrol versus how much a bin tag is. The world needs more Kayla's, Kevin. Thanks very much for helping us spread the message. And we just appeal to people to stop.
We'll just say thanks to the councillor Kevin Bradley there as well. We put up the post yesterday. Mm-hmm. We tagged a couple of councillors on the post, and Kevin was the first man to come back to us and says, we'll get the rubbish collected tomorrow morning. So
good stuff.
I just want to say thanks to Kevin for that.
All right, fair play. Credit where it is due. Thank you very much indeed, and best wishes to Kayla and the rest of the family. Thanks, Kevin. 086 60 25000 if you want to get in on that conversation there. Greg, condolences to the families of the two young people who lost their lives in North Inishowen this morning. God love them, all their families and their friends. That's coming in from Mary there. Indeed, I think we can all join in that. Right, I'm going to take a little break and we're going to be back with our next guest after. Education Minister Norma Foley is expected to bring a memo to Cabinet saying she would like a collective decision by parents not to buy phones for their young children. It comes as calls mount for a voluntary code restricting smartphone use for children under 13, which should be adopted by all primary schools and agreed on by all parents. Using mobile phones, we know, can have multiple effects in children. Well, a leading psychologist is warning parents of the dangers of mobile devices on the mental and physical health of young children and teenagers. She is chartered psychologist Catherine Hallisey and joins us now. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
It's great to have you back on the programme.
Thank you.
What are the impacts of mobile phone use on young people that we know of? Because, I mean, I think some of it's obvious and their attention is away, their head's stuck in a phone, you can see the white on their face, it doesn't feel right, right? But I mean, in the medium to long term, do we know yet what the impact of prolonged use of these devices actually is?
That's such an important question. The research is not conclusive simply because we don't have enough longitudinal data. And rather than demonising phones, I prefer to look at each aspect in isolation and to see the impact on overall well-being. So we know that more time spent on phones is means that there's less time moving your body. And we know that physical activity is incredibly protective for everybody's mental health, children, teenagers, adults. So anything that is reducing our physical activity, there's an opportunity cost here that we need to talk about. We also know there are studies that show that excessive phone use leads to sleep deprivation. The vast majority of teenagers will sleep with their phones on beside them in bed. So many teenagers who come to my clinic tell me that they do actually check their phones right throughout the night.
Mm-hmm.
There are friends reaching out to one another because their drive is to connect with one another at that age. That's their developmental task. But anything that negatively impacts sleep, we know is detrimental to mental health. Because a good night's sleep is so protective. It helps to reduce anxiety, ordinary everyday anxiety, but also over the long term, sleep deprivation actually has a very negative impact on mental health.
So in the first instance, it can be tough to sort of not, you know, to completely withhold a mobile phone. We'll get to that in a moment. So at the very least, if parents, guardians say, don't take your phone to bed or no phones after a certain time and it's sitting on the kitchen table for you when you get up in the morning. That in and of itself would be really quite effective, presumably, in preserving the sleep cycle.
Very much so. I'm not a fan of demonizing anything. It's simply about examining it and getting more and more intentional. So I recommend that every single person, children and adults, do not take their phones into their rooms. I did that a few years ago. I stopped taking my phone into my room and I got an alarm clock and it had a hugely beneficial impact.
You got a what? What? It's not the 1930s, an alarm clock.
And you know, but
can you get Facebook on it?
it stopped the dreaded roll and scroll. You know,
yeah.
Turn off the alarm, check the phone.
Guilty of it myself.
15,
yeah.
20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, depending on what's in the particular news cycle, you could start your day incredibly stressed by what you're seeing on your phone.
Yeah.
So again, I'm talking about isolating all the potential impacts. So we know the roll and scroll makes you lose time, so it reduces productivity, but it also can greatly impact your mood. And then you go out and you try and connect with your family members, but you're already in bad form.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's not about phones are bad. It's about how we use them needs to be examined so that we can optimise
that. But I think that's a reasonable compromise for all of us, isn't it? You know, and for all the reasons you've outlined, that you wake up in the morning, maybe you want to hop out of bed to get to your phone, I don't know, but you're not impacted straight away by something negative or what have you. You have a good night's sleep, and then you still have access to your device during the day. And of course, that's all age dependent. But as I say, I think that's a fair enough compromise for your own well-being.
Yeah, I'm only interested in following the data. I'm not interested in any hand-wringing or demonising anything or making anyone feel bad. So for anybody listening here and they've already bought a phone for their child, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm simply saying we need to get ahead of it. We need to really think about how we use it. And I do a lot of work with adults around managing their own screen use. This isn't just about children. It's about us. We always need, and this is the hard part for anyone listening, we need to start with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the type of phone use you are modelling. Because you cannot expect more from your child than you expect from yourself.
Yeah. I just sometimes feel that these devices are so integrated into our lives now that it's almost a tide that can't be pushed back. But we can't allow that to not allow us to give our children the best starts that we can. So I think the idea of whatever way this legislation or whatever form this takes, you know, people might say, oh, well, parents shouldn't need, you know, the government to step in this, that and the other. But I think it makes it easier for them to relate, you know, the argument to the children. Because at the moment, if you've got a class of 20, 11-year-olds, right, 19 have a phone and you want to take the stand with your child, it puts everyone in a very difficult situation. If there was sort of a uniform acceptance that they shouldn't have a phone, well, then it makes you, it makes your job a little bit easier. And I think maybe that's where this legislation or guidance or whatever it might be becomes very useful.
No, that is so spot on. So I have an online membership for parents called Reclaim Parenthood. And every single time the mobile phone question comes up in the group, there are some parents in the group whose schools actually have this in place, this voluntary charter that the parents can sign up to where they agree not to get their child a phone when they're in primary school. It's totally voluntary. But what these parents have said is, I hear it so often, I'm so glad this is one less thing for us to worry about. I'm so glad that I don't have to navigate the thing of I'm the only one in my class who doesn't have Snapchat. And, you know, there are very real social consequences if your child is the only one.
There is. And then that's what happens with the parents and guardians. You see, then you sort of start saying, right, I don't want them to have a phone because it'd be quite a negative impact. But then standing your ground on that, you start wondering, well, what is the impact on them? Are they being excluded? Is it affecting them psychologically in a different way? So, you know, if you want to be that parent, you're in a catch-22.
Yeah, and I have been that parent and I can tell you it did have a social impact and does have a social impact. However, what I say to my children, look, you know, unfortunately for you, I know the research. Unfortunately for you, this is my bread and butter. It's my day in, day out. And I think what has happened is because phones are such a part of all of our lives, we can almost feel helpless as parents.
Mm-hmm.
And we can think, oh, well, they need to be digitally literate or they need to have these skills or I don't want them to feel left out. But if you're making the choice, like let's say your school doesn't have this in place and you're making the choice not to have a phone, you then need to commit to other ways to support their social interaction. So that's what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the countryside, so I've said, okay, I just need to be totally okay with dropping them here, there and everywhere to meet their friends. I need our house to be the house where people come and hang out, you know. So on, I have five kids. So on Fridays, there are 10 children here every Friday, you know, because everybody will bring a friend over. And that's just the choice that I've made. Not everybody can make that choice. I'm not saying these are perfect choices.
But you kind of see an interesting dynamic, I would say, on a Friday, because I presume none of the children have a mobile device or access to them. So you get to observe the creatures in the wild, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, you know, how they interact and how quickly, you know, the habit of looking down and going with your finger, how that gets replaced by activity that perhaps, you know, people of my age would be more used to as a child. Do you see that? Do you observe that?
Definitely. And, you know, children are incredible. Children are so adaptable to whatever is in place in the house. And again, like, it's so important that anybody listening here realizes that there is no directive from me saying this is what you should do or this is what you shouldn't do. The only should I'm talking about is reflecting on your own values. Mm. So what do you want for your children? So my dream for my children is that childhood is extended for as long as possible, that I minimize their exposure to adult content before they're developmentally ready, that play is protected, because again, I know the research on play and psychological well-being. I know the research on in-person connection with family members and pets, but how that has a positive benefit on psychological well-being. Mm-hmm. So the future isn't guaranteed for any of us, but all I'm interested in is stacking the odds in their favor. And that's what I want for every child. Of course, it's my job as a psychologist. This is what I want. I want parents to be empowered so mm-hmm. that they can stack the odds in their child's favor, and that parents can genuinely feel empowered that the little things they're doing actually have a long-term benefit.
And up until now, we've kind of been talking about simply the interaction, even if it were a blank screen, i.e. how it affects their sleep, how it reduces their mobility. We haven't even spoken to them about what they're accessing on there. I mean, you touched on it in terms of adult content or what have you, but, you know, everything is designed to draw them in. You know, TikTok, amazing, don't get me wrong, but it's mm-hmm. designed there, the algorithm feeds people of a certain age certain things to sort of entice them and interest them and what have you, and the same with other apps as well. That's even another layer that we really haven't dug into in terms of the prolonged, you know, usage of a mobile phone at a certain young age.
Yes, and look, I work with a lot of children who have had accidental exposure to adult content and how that has had a very negative impact on them. Now, for the vast majority of children, it won't have a very negative impact. For some children, it will. It will lead to intrusive thoughts and images. But even looking at, there were a lot of adults who are in touch with me at the moment about how the news for the last 4 weeks is impacting them. You know, people are talking about vicarious trauma, and these are adults with fully developed brains. So when I'm hearing this from adults, I'm also thinking about all of the young people who are also being exposed to a lot of this incredibly distressing content, incredibly yeah. distressing images and videos, and how that is impacting their psychological well-being.
And your brain matures, doesn't it? And I presume its capability to process or analyze or compartmentalize or whatever the correct thing in the brain should do. You know, early exposure to stuff doesn't fast track that. I mean, the young mind has to be protected, I presume, as it develops. And, you know, at a certain age, you know, there's enough development to be able to process things, coupled presumably with general life experiences and what have you.
Yes, well, the prefrontal cortex isn't fully formed until the mid-20s to, you know, around 29-ish. You know, we're learning more and more about the brain all of the time, but we know that there are certain parts of the brain that take much longer to develop, and you can't fast track it. So when you're exposed to things before you're developmentally ready, it can have a profound impact on you. And look, we know that people in general are resilient. So it's not about removing all potential harms. It's simply about how can we pace things? Mm-hmm. How can we keep people in their developmental task? So in primary school, their developmental task is all around learning through play. It's all around forming social interaction through play. And yes, of course, you can play on phones, but it's not actually the same in terms of free play, creative play. And yes, you can definitely do creative things on screens, but we just don't know enough about mm-hmm. that yet, whereas we have a lot of very strong evidence base mm-hmm. to say we need to protect this in-person free play,
yeah.
in-person interaction, and even the non-verbal communication skills, helping our children really develop their understanding of mm-hmm. those. Because again, we know that that isn't fully formed, even in adolescence.
Yeah.
Your capacity to interpret nuance, facial expression, tone of voice, all of these things which are lost when you are just messaging.
And listen, pre-mobile phone, you can often tell the children who were exposed to American TV shows because they will replace words like pavement with sidewalk or whatever it might be and end up having some sort of a tang to their accents. So even before mobile phones, we can see what the impact exposure, even for an hour a day, might have. A caller says, Greg, this is interesting. I spoke with some teachers at the weekend and they were saying the number of children unable to use a pencil is increasing. Computers may be great, but we need to keep the writing skills alive. personally, not that really my view matters, I'm not terribly concerned about that. I'm not sure how much, you know, pencil writing is going to be critical in the future. I think that maybe is a different situation. I don't know what your views on that. Yes, it would be romantic in me would love to see, you know, them doing the homework with a pen and pencil. It is more really their development, how they interact with other people, and of course being active and their physical health. That's what more of a concern to me. It's an interesting observation from the teacher there, but maybe that is just the way it's going, that we're not going to be physically writing things.
Well, actually, the pencil grip isn't the issue. It's more about the fine motor skills. So pencil grip is just one fine motor skill. So if you are seeing children who have difficulty holding a pencil, I don't actually care much about pencil grip. What it's indicating is that there are issues with fine motor skills, and that actually is a problem.
Yeah, okay.
That is something that has that does have an impact. And there are some interesting emerging studies on the bone development in the hands and about how all of this hands-on play is incredibly important for fine motor skills, but also, you know, how the hand is. And like anybody who has experienced repetitive strain injury, it knows how painful that is. Yeah. And you certainly don't want your child to have repetitive strain. And one of the issues with the lack of free play when it's all adult directed play mm-hmm. is children are practicing skills repetitively, whether it's organized sport or organized games, rather than the free movement. And physios will talk about the children that they're seeing now, younger and younger, with injuries from sport, when they're not having the overall skills, the overall gross motor skills of jumping, running, playing, mm-hmm. start, stop, that you would get in natural play that children do when they are allowed to play freely.
Okay. It's an all interesting area, and it's somewhat separate, but just briefly, Catherine. I was chatting to a person who specialises in speech therapy with young people recently. And they were saying that one of the greatest, not one of the greatest problems, but a major issue at the moment in delayed speech and what have you is Cocomelon. That it is too visually stimulating and it doesn't assist in any way, that there are other programs that they can watch for a bit and it actually helps with their speech development. But they're seeing a trend, an increasing trend, of particularly with delayed speech where there's no other issues present, Cocomelon is often a feature there. So again, what we take in can impact our development, really, is the point I was trying to make there.
But I would just pause on that one. I would be really cautious about saying anything like that. What's much more likely is, so unless a child is sitting in front of that program for 24 hours a day, I would be 99% sure that is not causing the speech issues. What's much more likely to be causing the speech issues is actually there's, you know, there are lots of things going on in terms of our society.
But it's no coincidence. I take what the point you're making, but there is no coincidence, presumably, and you talk about the facts and figures, that if you watch BBC created children's programmes, that there is a deliberate learning process through that, that, you know, a speech therapist might say that is better, more useful than not. So if that is the case, when you have something that is very overly stimulating for children and doesn't offer any, you know, it's very repetitive and doesn't offer any educational benefit. It has to, you know, if one is better, then it has to have some level of an impact, surely.
Well, everything is dose dependent. So how much time, you know, again, looking at opportunity cost. Look, I watched unbelievable trash on TV when I was a child. You know, loads of us did. Like I'm a child of the 80s. So I think it can be seductive to talk about particular programs. But, you know, we need to look at the evidence base.
And I know you don't want to demonize anything.
I'll just share one particular
either.
Thing yeah. about that. It's actually parent-child interaction that is the biggest has the biggest impact on a child's speech development and what's called parent ease. So there's so much more. I'd love to talk to you about that another
time. We'll do that another time, a particular one actually, because I think a lot of parents would find that useful. So maybe if you're open to that, Catherine, just in terms of how we interact with particularly the very young children to bring them on, that's yes. definitely worthy of another item. Thank you so much for your time, Catherine.
Thank you too.
It's always lovely to have you on the show. Take care of yourself. And we'll
all
not fall out over Cocomelon, okay? Bye bye. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Bye bye. All right. That was Catherine Hallisay there. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Give us a call on 0749125000. Do you know some things that are so you just think people wouldn't be capable of, and then you see it for your own eyes and realise they are. There are an individual or people or persons who are going through obituary notices of people who have passed away and creating Facebook pages which state, and I presume it's the one page they changed the name of, stating that you can watch the live stream of their funeral. And then when you do click in, because a lot of people might think that interesting, when you click in, then it looks for your credit card details to give you access to it. It's an absolute scam. But I just thought it remarkable that there is an individual or a group or whatever in, not in Donegal, but certainly going through the obituary notices in the county, identifying people, creating a Facebook page that says, you know, Greg Hughes, watch funeral mass here. And then you click into it and you have to input your details. So just keep an eye out for that. I presume it's a scam. I presume it's a scam, but I saw it a couple of on a couple of occasions over the last week, and only clicked one just out of curiosity. And I thought, why would they be seeking my credit card details anyway? Pharmacists will soon be able to extend the life of a prescription from 6 to 12 months. It's part of a measure to enhance the role of pharmacists and limit the pressure on GP services. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly says from the 1st of March next, the extension will also mean many patients are able to continue medication without the need for a repeat prescription. Tom Murray is Treasurer of the Irish Pharmaceutical Union, and he joins us now. Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, good. On the face of it, this seems like a good idea. Pharmacists have said, you know, we've got a skill set, we've got expertise, we can help in certain areas. Is it as simple as that? Do you believe this is good news?
I do. We welcome it very much. So I suppose the task force was set up in July, and the minister had asked the task force to report to him by the end of October. It's clear that they have done their job. There's 13 experts on the task force, including representatives of the IMO and doctors, and they have said that they recognise the clinical skills of pharmacists. And I suppose, as you say there, in terms of reducing waiting lists at GPs and freeing up some GP time, they have said that after consultation, where a pharmacist deems it appropriate, so if somebody's unstable on the same medicine for a long time, for example, blood pressure medicines, that the pharmacist can make a decision to extend the prescription up to 12 months, or indeed the GP can also prescribe a 12-month prescription from the 1st of March as well. So it's an extension of the prescription validity at the discretion either of the GP or the pharmacist to extend it from 6 months to 12 months, which will make it more convenient for patients who won't have to revisit their doctor every 6 months if there's no clinical need.
Do you think, because obviously the patient themselves might deem there is a clinical need and want to go to the GP to be on the safe side, do you think this measure in and of itself is going to really alleviate the pressure on GPs, or will we have to see what other layers of measures go on top of this?
Well, this is the first of hopefully several layers of measures. As you've alluded to there, and where a patient deems that they wish to go and see a GP, there's nothing going to stop a patient wishing to do that. If a pharmacist deems that they can extend the prescription, it's after consultation with the patient. So it's not just a patient walks in and says, for example, I don't want to pay the doctor for another private prescription, so you extend that to 12 months instead of 6 months. It's a consultation based on clinical need, using the pharmacist's skills and recognising the pharmacist's expertise on medicines to say, actually, it is appropriate for that, but it's not going to refuse. It's not a case where a patient says, I want to see a doctor, and anybody's going to refuse that. Absolutely not at all. It is the first of hopefully several measures, including, as we've talked about before, a minor ailment scheme whereby pharmacists will be able to prescribe or to supply medicines on the medical card that we currently do privately. If the like of yourself walked into my pharmacy and you asked for a cold or cough remedy or a flu remedy or a hay fever remedy, I would sell it to you. If you have a medical card, you have to go to the doctors to get it on your medical card. So that's another of the hopeful recommendations that will come out from the task force. These measures together would alleviate queues and pressure on GPs.
All right. It's progress. Okay. Interesting. Tom, as always, thank you so very much. That's Tom Murray, who's Treasurer of the Irish Pharmaceutical Union. That comes in effect from March 1st. Pharmacists having the power to extend prescriptions up to a maximum of 12 months for patients if they feel it is appropriate. Do you think you would avail of that service? Is that good news? Just back to the use of mobile phones in young people. Parents use these devices as a pacifier and to keep them out of their hair. It's the parenting skills that need looked at. There is going to be an element of that, but you see, just because maybe that is the case, it doesn't mean we can't take a step back and go, right, let's reassess here. The media and public need a narrative of good versus evil, but the Israel conflict, Hamas wants the total annihilation of Israel. How can you negotiate with this ideology? Ireland is an anti-Semitic country, and the leftists in Ireland are responsible for this? I don't know. I don't think it's... I'm not saying that your depiction of the Irish is correct, but also, you know, people are able to think for themselves as well in this country. I think we're pretty good at that. The only way to stop litter is to put bins into the household charge. Then every house will have a bin. Well, the household charge is not for that at all, but I take your point. In the north, they pay rates and the bins are included in the charge. What's littering like? You're listening to us there in the likes of Derry and Tyrone. Is there an issue with littering? Do you believe that your bins being included as part of your rates means there's not as much litter as you might see in Donegal? Let us know. 086 from the north, 00353 86 60 25,000.